I really think coaching is so pivotal because, especially in my case, it comes at a time where like you're at this inflection point. And I think on your own, you realize that our natural tendency is just to choose the default path, choose something that's comfortable, something that's secure and known. And a coach really comes in there to shake it up and help you realize like, this is actually what I want. And in order to get there, I don't have to do it alone. I don't have to just keep getting in my own way. They help remove that part of you that's just helping you, that's keeping you stuck where you are. That's what coaching means to me.
Welcome to the Uplevel Podcast, the podcast that makes our world a healthier, more alive, and connected place to be. After listening, you'll have practical tools you can start using right away to uplevel the world around you. We're your hosts, Christy Mann and Rachel Baldi. Let's uplevel now. Welcome, uplevelers. We are in the season of the ROI of coaching in the workplace. And today's guest has direct experience of more than a decade of using coaching in many different roles inside organizations. So let me introduce you to today's guest. With a mission to guide individuals towards their inner calling and life's purpose, Susie Ade combines her background in mindfulness, meditation, and coaching to help people discover what they want out of life and how to get it. She's a certified professional coactive coach and an associate certified coach through the International Coaching Federation. Susie spent the past 10 years at Google, leading programs across marketing, trust and safety, and people development. And most notably, she spent several years creating sustained well-being and psychological safety within organizations as the global program manager for mental health and well-being. We can't wait to hear more about that. And during her time at the company, she coached hundreds of employees on reaching the next level or pivoting into a new career. In September of 2023, she left Google to pursue her coaching career practice full-time. Susie lives in Atlanta, Georgia with her husband and her one-year-old daughter. She enjoys running, reading about the mystics and spirituality, and traveling the world with her loved ones. Welcome to the Uplevel Podcast, Susie.
Woohoo! So happy to be here.
So glad that you said yes. And I was just telling you before we hit record, you were one of the first people that told me that you listened to the Uplevel Podcast, and that was a milestone moment for me and Rachel, the creators behind this. So just really appreciating the support and the feedback that you've provided us along the way.
You're welcome. It's really good content, and you bring in a diverse set of speakers. So it's like always something new to look forward to.
Well, and one of the reasons why I invited you specifically is because you have really got an interesting experience around coaching inside the workplace as a people manager, using these skills and this way of being, as well as doing internal coaching inside of one of the world's leading organizations. So we're going to have you help us break this down. So let's just start, get a little bit of your background. How did coaching find you? How did you find coaching?
Yeah, so I think like most coaches, it finds you, right? It's not something you read about. Like you, when you're a child, you're like, oh, I want to be a coach one day. It's something that's it's broad and encompassing. But I think the way it found me was a bit circuitous. So while I was at Google, I mean, it's such a cool playground. You can explore a lot of different areas. And I fell into this really, one of the most famous courses that they have. It's called Search Inside Yourself. And it's a course where it started with like training, mostly engineers, like the foundations of emotional intelligence and mindfulness, and how those two skills could really help up-level you, just become a better person, a better manager. And it's a 2-day course, and you go very deep into who you are, how you want to be in this world, and then how to use your mind and awareness and your gift of attention to really focus on the things that you want. And kind of in that exploration, I found that, you know, I really wasn't happy where I was in my career, and I just felt this longing for something different. And in that process, someone that I was talking to at that course recommended working with a coach. I didn't know what that was at the time, but Google offered a benefit where you could work with a coach through BetterUp or through a company called Lyra. So reached out to a coach through that service. And then it was pretty transformational. I think it's the first time where I got to talk to someone and they like repeated back to me just the terrible things I was saying to myself, the limiting beliefs that I had and how that was impacting the way I was showing up, how that was impacting the way I was working in this world. And kind of in a roundabout way, I ended up taking a 3-month sabbatical, traveled the world to harvest wine, but also just felt this re-energizing part of me that just made me feel more equipped to take control of my career. I changed it to something else. I moved locations. It was just like a reset for me. But all along the way, like this was a really pivotal moment for me. And I think later down the road, I was like, okay, this coaching really worked. How did it work? So I was like, I want to understand it. So in talking to some of my friends, I heard about the school called Coactive. And I signed up for the fundamentals course. And as I'm in this fundamentals course, I'm realizing that it really pulls on all the skills that I just naturally feel like I have, just mindfulness, active listening, being with someone. And I just kind of felt like it just pulled on all those skills, and I just kept kind of going with it. I mean, it's just this like unraveling that happens, and you find like there's a profession for people that want to help someone, want to listen to them, and want to help them fulfill their full potential. That is like the coolest job in the world. So I got certified and then just started working internally at the company through our internal coaching program while I was working full time. And then it just had legs from there. And now I'm like several years later, you know, focusing on my own coaching business. So I quit Google back in September, and yeah, now I'm on to this new chapter.
Which is so exciting. And I want to talk more about that. Congratulations. That's a big step for anyone who's been internal. And of course, there's challenges, but there's also lots of benefits and rewards, which I got to hear a little bit before we started. So maybe we can go into that in a bit. But I want to talk a little bit more about this journey you went on to. It sounds like what you did is you uncovered skills and a way of being that was innate in you. And the process of having a coach supported that. And then the process of you taking that first course started to reveal like, oh, this is really actually an innate, natural way for me to be. Is that an accurate playback of your experience?
Yeah, definitely.
Yeah. And how would you define coaching?
Yeah, I know like the International Coaching Federation defines it as, you know, a coachee and a client like working together, you know, in a thought-provoking way to like unlock their full potential. And I think there's a lot of different flavors of coaching, and how I describe it to my potential clients is using just different coaching tools like active listening, repeating back, you know, exploring different perspectives. I help you understand what you really want and how to get that. And I am under the firm belief that all the answers lie within each one of us. I don't have to be an expert in your life, your industry, any of that to really help you figure out how to navigate the inevitable roadblocks and challenges that you face. And I really think coaching is so pivotal because, especially in my case, it comes at a time where like you're at this inflection point. And I think on your own, you realize that our natural tendency is just to choose the default path, choose something that's comfortable, something that's secure and known. And a coach really comes in there to shake it up and help you realize, like, this is actually what I want. And in order to get there, I don't have to do it alone. I don't have to just keep getting in my own way. They help remove that part of you that's just helping you, that's keeping you stuck where you are. So that's what coaching means to me.
Well, then let's put it in the context of being a manager of others, a manager of people. As you started to receive coaching, and then you started to develop your coaching capability, how did it impact and influence the people you were leading and managing?
Yeah, in every possible way. Coaching gives you, and this is why I think it's not just for everyone. And that's why at Google, you know, they're offering these coaching fundamentals classes to managers primarily, but also anyone that wants to be a coach within our system. It gives you these tools of, I'd say at the core of it is just listening and being with someone. And when you think about, like, how do you run a team? How do you run an organization? It's like, it's just made up of people. And I think you can solve any problem if you really understand the human being, what they're going through, and remove yourself from that. So I think one of the coolest things that I learned within coaching training was, like, the levels of listening. So there's level one, which oftentimes we're just, as someone's talking, I'm just thinking, what am I going to say next? How can I use you to get what I'm trying to get out of this conversation? How do I come off as knowledgeable, direct, all these things? And not really listening to the person or seeing the person in front of you. Then the level two is just like, I'm with you. I'm only hearing what you have to say. I'm like completely engulfed in what you're coming with. My person is dissolved. And then the level three is just that part of you that's like, what is not being said here? What is my intuition? What does my gut have to say about this conversation? And that's where it gets really exciting, the level three. But I think even as a manager, as a leader, being in that level two, it unlocks so much of what's really going on within the business. And knowing that a lot of things can be solved at the smallest levels, the people who are on the front line. And I think the leaders that I always admired the most, the ones that I tried to be just like, were the ones who made you feel heard and understood and actually did something about the things that people were bringing up, and not just shy away from them.
So it sounds like learning to listen more deeply and also to pull in your intuitive self, your intuition. The impact is that it had people feel seen, heard, and you were able to really serve them in a direct way, whether it was maybe something to do with their own development and or a challenge they're having on the project or in a relationship on their team. And so, like, when we try to, like, create a business case around that, in your experience, what would you articulate is the business case?
The business case, so at Google, it's kind of evolved now, but we have a survey called Google Geist, which just, it evaluates someone on almost every possible level, like how they feel about the company, how they feel toward their leaders, how happy they are, how long they're going to stay. And so much of this, I think, can be pinpointed to how their direct manager, their manager's manager, and, you know, the VP makes them feel. And it's very hard to make them feel seen, you know, many levels removed, but there are leaders that can do that. And I think when they're able to, I think, show up as their most authentic self, people want to stay and want to work for that person. And I oftentimes at Google and, like, a lot of tech companies, the thing I was going to say was that people are just, like, they're just there to solve problems. Like, they get so analytical. They don't know what the right hand and the left hand are doing. Like, they forget that, like, there's another human being on this, like, pixeled screen that's got a heart and a soul and a mind and ambitions, and they just want to, like, use them. And then I think that's what leads to people burning out and quitting. And so, to get to your question about what's the business case, I think there's just such a strong correlation of people staying and retaining that talent? Because we know how expensive that is to lose someone that you spent so much money recruiting and training and trying to get them on board into the company, then just like letting so many of them fall to the wayside, which is what I saw during the pandemic. I mean, I coached hundreds of people that just felt completely unseen and have suffered from major bouts of imposter syndrome. And you could tell the leaders were just so concerned with their own issues that they didn't even see what was really like in front of them, right under their noses.
I mean, this is a big reason why we're doing this season, is because of the past 4 years, we know that the role of people manager has shifted so much. And pre-pandemic years, you could get by as a manager of others and not necessarily have a coaching competency, but we don't think it's possible anymore. In order to not just survive these times, but to reconcile some kind of thriving environment where people aren't burning out, like you said, where the results are being achieved in a sustainable way, we believe people managers need to have those deep listening skills that you spoke about, an ability to be curious and ask questions, to witness others, to acknowledge who they're being, not just give them feedback on the work that they're doing. And so if your story is really highlighting that, and I'm wondering if you can share a specific story of where you use these skills to support a direct report, unlock something, find a new perspective when they were stuck, so that we can continue to unpack the ROI of coaching.
Yeah. Well, there's been a lot of transformation, but the first thing that kind of comes to mind though was all of the people that I was coaching during the heart of the pandemic. So I was what they call like a Noogler coach. So Noogler was people who are new to the company. And Google hired, I think, more people than they ever had during the pandemic. It just kind of naturally came during that year. And you can imagine onboarding onto a company where like we're still figuring out how to do it digitally. There's no one to greet you. There's no one to ask questions from, like in a just on the cuff kind of way. And so the people I was coaching would just come to me, and they would be so scared to say anything on these conference calls, or they would just fear like, well, what if I tell my manager, I really don't know what's going on or how to do my job, you know, how to even log in and, you know, use some of like the basic tools. They were so scared of losing their job over just very basic questions. And through coaching, you kind of unlock like, okay, what is this belief that you have of yourself? And oftentimes it was like, I'm stupid. I shouldn't have been hired here. People are going to find out that I was a mistake. You know, these like textbook thoughts that come up when someone really carries that imposter syndrome. And you start to unpack like, how does that belief impact the way you do show up authentically? How does it impact the way you see your team, your boss, the company? And you just see it at all levels. It has this domino effect of them just feeling this worthlessness, this feeling of like not belonging. And then as you start to see that, like that play out, it's very clear, like, oh, I don't want to live like this. I mean, I'm working at this company. I'm giving most of my life, my best years to this. Like I worked so hard to get here. Like, why would I carry that belief with me? And so together we started to rewrite that. It's like, what is the story you want to carry? What's the story that will make you feel empowered to speak up and give all of yourself? And what can we pull from the past, from internships or other jobs that you've had where you really felt like you were on and you were contributing and you were the best version of yourself? And like, how do we tap into that? And it was just amazing the transformation that people would have after just maybe a couple of sessions of coaching. And then they just started to feel like they really could navigate just the craziness of that time.
Well, in this concept and the coactive model, we call it the saboteur. I call it head trash, and you've talked about it. It's these self-limiting statements that we all have as human beings, and especially during times of high stress, uncertainty, chaos, crises, right? We've just had crisis after crisis to navigate. And so it makes sense that that part of the brain would be loud during these times. So to hear you as a coach, you were really helping people first identify, hey, this is a part of your brain that you can actually harness. Because I know for me, when I first learned that, I was blown away. And this was, you know, going back 20 years ago, I didn't know that there was a distinction between, let's just call it my higher self or my healthier self, and then the part of me that might try to sabotage or get in my own way. So that process, that very, very, it's a very specific and intimate process that the coach and the coachee go through, is so liberating. And is for an organization to invest in supporting leaders to go through a process like that, like you said, it's going to lead to healthier, more engaged people. It's going to lead to lower turnover rates because of that. And it's going to lead to higher levels of engaged productivity, a productivity that's sustainable, because it's going to be coming from a more authentic place versus the imposter syndrome or the saboteur. So yay to that, Susie. You're like the saboteur warrior going in at Google during the past 4 years. Yes, getting that. And it's such an important part of coaching, that using that specific tool and doing that work. What are some tips you have for maybe newer coaches listening, or people managers who might be able to start to integrate this into their leading of others? How would you bring that tool in?
Yeah, I think it's, especially like in, so we have one-on-ones with our reports, and I think it's even in like the, sometimes they bring a problem or something that they're dealing with. And rather than just going quick to like, let's solve the problem, I think there's just a very simple question you can ask of, you know, like what's the story you're telling yourself about the situation or this problem? And usually you find like there's so much there, right? It's just like, oh, well, this person clearly doesn't like to work with me, and that's why I can't get this done. Or, you know, everybody is out to get me, and, you know, no one wants to help me achieve my own goals. And then like you see, okay, that's it. Then it's just like, let's just keep unpacking it. Let's look at like what's really true in this situation. Like what actually is the reality of what's happening? What facts do you have to support that? And then it just starts to kind of unravel a little bit. And then, you know, I think that's kind of solving just like, what's the record that's playing in the background? And then kind of once you get past that, you can go to, okay, well, what are the blockers for the problem that you have? Or like, where can I actually help you tangibly? And that's like where a manager can step in and offer some of, you know, the more mentorship advice. But I think jumping right to that, you're not equipping the person to solve it for themselves and really feel resourceful in their own way. And that's where I think the real learning happens. But it's just in asking that very simple question of, what's the story here? And diving in a little deeper.
Beautiful. So if I'm a people manager and listening to this, and I know that I need to develop these skills because times have shifted, and this is what really, in order to be a successful people manager, is going to help me and my team. But I'm hesitant. You know, I'm hesitant because perhaps this feels too personal to ask a question like you just suggested, or to suggest to someone that sounds like imposter syndrome. What's your guidance to that specific individual?
Yeah, well, I'd say like that hesitancy may also be coming from a place of like, do you actually know this person? I think that often managers really overlook like the fact that you have to start to build rapport. You have to show some vulnerability about your own self. Like at all levels of the company, every manager, even if you're the, you know, obviously, if you're Sundar, you know, you're the CEO, you are beholden to shareholders. And I mean, it just never stops. So I think showing your vulnerability to your direct report, building that rapport is going to help you get that basis to open the door. That being said, I think it's always important to ask for consent for these types of things, or also saying, you know, this is a safe space. And people can feel open to sharing and they don't have to share. What Google did too, because there's a lot in these situations right there, because the managers is control of their performance reviews and things like that. Some people didn't feel like they had that psychological safety. So we offered coaching and other like third parties basically to come in and work with that person one-on-one. And then through kind of a designed alliance with the manager, they would then go back and kind of share some of the information that came out of those sessions. That's also another way to do it, is just to bring in a third party that can kind of help you, you know, broker the situation. But if you are determined to do it yourself and you still feel that hesitancy, I'd say just start to get to know them on a deeper individual level. And then I think that opens up the door as to how far you can go or what they're really willing to share about themselves.
Super helpful. We've noticed that in the trainings we're doing in different organizational clients, the consent piece is just so critical. And I think most of us have been on a journey over the past 4 years of really amplifying our sensitivities, right? So that we are creating psychological safety. We are creating spaces that feel safe for vulnerability, for bravery, and these types of conversations. And so I want to highlight that as another really important skill, especially for people managers who are starting to integrate these skills and concepts into their people management. Ask permission. You know, do I have your permission to explore that internal dialogue with you, you know, as your partner in this? And that not only obviously can support the direct report and the coachee to feel more safe, but for you as the people manager and the coach, it gives you that confidence and that permission to use these skills and to show up more coach-like, which we want, right, Susie? We want for everyone.
Yes, we do.
Tell us about the well-being work and the mental health work you started to do inside the organization. Because it sounds like, maybe I'm making this up, that when you went deeper into getting coached and then developing yourself as a coach, new roles popped up that felt more aligned to like who you were in that moment. Is that fair? Is that accurate?
Yes. Yeah. Well, it definitely... I think through the coaching work, you start to uncover like, what are the themes that I've always held for myself, but I just kind of shied away from. And so actually over time, I worked with that same coach like in many pivotal moments. But the second time I worked with that coach, they helped me job craft the final role that I ended up having before I left, which was the global program manager for mental health and well-being. I never thought it was possible, but through a lot of persistence and kind of uncovering like what are the values and the things that I just always enjoyed, like it happened. And I will just say like a lot, especially at a bigger company, this isn't true of every company, but kind of just asking to help somebody that you're really interested in what they do, just say, I will do this for free in my spare hours. People will let you do a lot of crazy things, like even if you feel like unqualified for. So that's what I essentially did. I just reached out to our chief mental health advisor and I said, I want to support you in any way that I can. And I just over time started to prove that I could do the work. And she ended up hiring me. But in terms of kind of what that world looked like, this was kind of at the onset of COVID. So like there was so much focus on mental health and well-being because we just, the whole veil was lifted. We realized that, you know, mental health was like at the forefront. People were alone. People were experiencing immense amounts of grief with no community to share that with. And this was a huge burden too. I mean, we were putting everything on our managers and our teams to kind of check in and figure out how their teammates were doing. And they didn't know, they didn't feel equipped to even meet the need that was there. So our team kind of came in to set up a few programs that could just almost like stop the bleeding and just help equip. We primarily focus managers on how to understand and recognize when there is signs of mental illness and what to do in those scenarios, because oftentimes people just don't know. They don't know the signs of it, and they want to shy away from it because they may feel like, oh, this is way outside my realm. And oftentimes when it is outside your realm, but there are resources and there are places for you to like to direct somebody to that can really help them meet that need. So we launched a program that was called, Mental Health First Aid for Managers, and they went through that. And then the second thing that we really tried to focus on was in particular areas where they didn't have access to like full-time therapy. Like it was just a little harder to reach. And I don't know if you've ever gone through this, but like finding a therapist is very arduous. It's like dating. It's exactly like dating. You have to find someone that can meet with you. It has availability, that you mesh well with, that specializes in the things that you specialize in. So it was so difficult. So we created a guide to help people find a therapist, but also for places where it was, in more rural areas, we found therapists that were on the ground that could work at sites where the folks that we serve were in data centers. They physically had to go into the data center during the pandemic. They weren't working from home. So we wanted them to have access to somebody whenever they needed it. So that was one of our primary focuses just during COVID. Those were our two big priority areas.
What an incredible initiative to be a part of and to be one of the like lead architects of. How will you now, say 3 years later, looking back, like how will this be remembered in your career, in your journey?
Wow. Never even thought about that question. I feel like it's going to be remembered by, it was the first time in my career, my 10-year career, where I really felt like my mission was to put people first. And there was, and I think actually this goes back to just the whole theme of what we're talking about, ROI, mental health and well-being. It was very difficult for us to prove the ROI of what we were doing. I mean, you can show like the increase of people seeking out therapy, taking advantage of our EAP services, but that's kind of a lagging indicator, right? Like, when you're really meeting the need, but it's still squishy and it's nebulous. And the only way we really could get people to help us, like VPs to support us, is they really had this as their own mission, was to support the mental health and well-being of their employees, knowing that it's very difficult to show the impact, but knowing that it's the right thing to do. So to answer your question of like how I'll look back on this, it's just like, It was a time for me where I just felt so fueled and empowered because I knew I was really helping people, and it didn't matter if I could show how this was proving the bottom line. I knew that I was making a difference in people's lives through the work I was doing. And that once you get a taste for that, you realize like, that's it. Like that will fuel you no matter what you're doing. Yeah. And
doing the right thing is the best business case often. Doing the right thing actually does lead to the best business results. We know that. Mm-hmm. And just on the same thread, because it's so cool that you had this opportunity and to bring your passion and your skills and your genius all together. What are some of the things that, say, people managers or leaders in organizations who are making decisions about bringing in mental health or designing mental health programs and coaching skills, trainings, et cetera, what are some of the things they should be paying attention to? Like you said, you started to educate managers on what do you notice when there are mental health challenges being faced?
Mm-hmm. Yeah, I think like at the leadership level, One really good indicator is actually looking at like the people who are taking mental health leave. Because I think that that's a really good sign. One, I'm so grateful we have that and that people should be taking advantage of it. But if that's the case, like there are probably things that have been, could have been done upstream to really support that individual before they had to get to that point. And as best as you can, really exploring that. What was their journey like? What was it about either the toxicity on the team or maybe something personally that they were going through that maybe they could have helped meet that need before it got to that point where they just felt like they had to take an extended amount of leave? And talking to that person one-on-one. The other thing I think leaders can do is just educating themselves about the EAP services and what they offer and actually exploring that yourself, like really putting your time and energy into working on yourself, getting therapy, or if you don't need therapy because you don't have a severe or just even a minor mental illness, working with a coach. And we partnered really closely with Lyra, who you would go through an automated system. And depending on, you know, what you described in this just quick little poll, it either presented a coach, a well-being coach or a therapist, that could work with you on CBT or something else, some other interventions. So I would recommend leaders just to really experience what that is like and to work on themselves. And then that then gives you the perspective of what people are actually experiencing, what they're dealing with. And then to allow yourself to grow and to focus on your own mental health journey, because it is a forever journey. There's no destination. We're just constantly improving ourselves, progressing towards the best version of ourselves. And it's something we never arrive at. But we really need to lean on other people in order to help us get to that place. And I think a leader has to be able to experience that firsthand in order for them to really meet the need for the people that are working with them.
And what if I'm working in an organization that doesn't have values around this or infrastructure like a large organization like Google has and does, but I know that this is the right thing to do and that this will be a good business investment. Where would you point me?
Yeah. So we talked about this a ton because we, even though we were at Google scale, we were still kind of like this scrappy startup because we didn't have a lot of funding. So I would say mental health first aid is something that is available to any organization. There's third party groups that provide it at a very decent rate. So I think like exploring that and seeing if you can bring that into your organization. And at the same time, if funding is an issue too, partnering with your local HR and saying, hey, we want to offer some of these different services. Is there something we can do where, you know, the employees pay 2/3 and we pay 1/3, for whatever type of service it may be? And using that kind of just as a test pool. The last thing I'd say you can do too, and what, you know, Google tried, we did everything. You can also bring people in to like train people within your organization to either deliver mental health first aid, or, you know, you can have a coaching program like we did, which I'm sure we'll go into, that allow you to, you know, it's a train the trainer model, meaning you pay this one time fee and then it's internal to your company and then it just grows organically from there. It's all grassroots. And that is a huge cost savings way of going about doing something like this. And then I think to the first point you had about like, okay, there's no intrinsic values. There's nobody else really vying for this. That happens all the time. I mean, so many of the programs that we led, it was clear that there was no VP support. No one cared. But at the same time, if there's at least one willing individual that's going to fight for this, that's kind of all it takes. Because then you realize like that person stands up and says what they're experiencing. And then there's a whole host of other people that come out of the woodwork and say, yeah, me too. I want to help in this way. So we had mental health ambassadors and just so many of these really organic groups that just formed because people really cared about it on the individual level. And there was no support from the higher ups, but that didn't matter. We still created the movement internally.
Yes. Yes, Doozy. You created the movement internally. Such important work and such during such an important time. Let's talk about that. How does training people managers and coaching skills impact what we're talking about? Support mental health and well-being of employees? Because that's maybe a more accessible path to folks. It's like, okay, these are people management skills. I'm going to invest in, maybe it's just one team to start, or multiple heads from many different teams. But why is that a good place to look at and to potentially start really helping up-level the well-being and mental health of your teams?
How does coaching training for managers help increase the well-being, overall well-being of teams? Yeah. Well, I'd say starting with managers and maybe even managers of managers is a great place, because you just realize the scale and the reach that they have. Because if you start on, like, you know, the individual contributor level, that's just one, I mean, that's one person, but talking to someone who has mass influence, it's, if you can impact them, you're in, there's a huge ripple effect, right, to everybody else that's within their orbit. So I think starting at that level is incredibly impactful. And then in terms of, like, how coaching training impacts the overall well-being, I mean, it's so much of what we know about an employee's overall sentiment and retention and experience of the company is directly related to their experience of their manager and of their leadership. And if we know we can change and transform the way that they're being and how they show up, we know that the well-being on the whole is going to change. It's not going to happen overnight. It takes a while to settle, but it moves in that direction. And I really do think that, I mean, I worked for so long and I worked with managers that were awful, and it kind of self-select. I mean, they just didn't last, but the people that really could hone these coaching skills, they moved up, and they moved up quickly. And because people wanted to follow them and work with them because they felt like they belonged and that their skills were recognized and honored. And that's what coaching training does. So it does percolate into all aspects of the organization and up-leveling the overall well-being that's present.
There's a great statement of the ROI of coaching in the workplace right there. Tell us about a coach or a leader, like a people manager, and you don't have to share their name, but take us into a moment of time that this person really supported you. And if you'll just give us a little insight, like, what was the context and what did they do, or how were they showing up that supported you in your own growth and development?
I mean, yeah, one person really comes to mind that I think from the get-go just cared deeply about who I was as an individual, what I was going through outside of work, and how that impacted how I showed up day in and day out, not to the point where they would pry or they would ask too much. It was just like, whatever I was willing to share, they would always start off our meetings with, how are you doing? What's going on in your life? And then it was always from the vantage point of, how can I support you? And that made me feel like I was in the position of power and I could ask for help when I needed it, but also there was full trust and capability and that I was capable of doing my job, which I think giving that ownership and autonomy to someone, like, we know for a fact that is one of the most important ways of what makes a really powerful leader, is not micromanaging, but giving full authority and then intervening when it's necessary, but allowing them to grow and to make mistakes and to do it their own way, make it their own. That's what this manager did for me. And I just flew. I did so well on that team. I got promoted right away, and I just did my best work there because I key tapped into what I was naturally good at and let me navigate it myself. So I think that's someone that definitely comes to mind. And they were a natural coach because there was very little advice giving, if at all, only if I solicited it. And it was just all my own. I was on my own journey of self-discovery, that they were just along. They were just my partner in that. And yeah, it was very powerful.
That's brilliant. And it's, some might say you can't train those. And there are some people that are just more naturally like that. Because what I'm hearing is the qualities of they're holding you. And this is a cornerstone of the coactive model. They're holding you naturally creative, resourceful, and whole. You've got the answers. There's nothing broken, nothing to be fixed. And then they're really tapping into that part of you and letting you go and learn and make your own mistakes and come back with the learning. And they're not directing and problem solving, as I'm sure there's some of that, but it sounds like they were really asking those open-ended, curious questions so that they were, again, tapping into your own resource and creativity, which we can train that, right? And this is another reason why we're having this conversation, because we believe that if more leaders can amplify the being of a coach, the coaching mindset, that that leads to these environments that Susie just described so beautifully. Because we want workplaces that are of well-being and where people are engaged and they're feeling empowered and aligned. And so that's a really beautiful story. So we'll have to say thank you to that person, because clearly they made a mark on you. And here you are now, you have chosen to leave your incredible corporate career. We got to hear some of it and the path. And it sounds like you left on a real high doing work that was very much aligned to what's important to you and to your purpose. What had you choose to leave and focus on your own private practice and consultancy?
Mm-hmm. Yeah. It's like there's the, well, it, I mean, it all comes down to the fact that I had my daughter. She's 15 months today, but, I realized as soon as I had her, like everything changed. I had a really awesome maternity leave, and then coming back, it just felt so foreign to me coming back to work. I was spending money to send her away to be taken care of by someone else. And in return, I'd come and do the work I was doing, which was okay. And yet it just felt okay, because it's like whatever I was doing in this work context, I really felt like if it were to exchange time with her, it had to be very purpose driven. It had to use like all of my capabilities, because not only was I exchanging time with her, but I also like, I realized like as she's getting older, she's looking at me. She's going to mirror me. She's going to just receive everything that I am giving. And a lot of times I'd come back and pick her up and I'd just be, you know, very depleted, because there's so much, there's work politics. There's a lot of things that are involved, in the corporate setting. And I just thought to myself, like, there's something more that I can do with my time to really feel rejuvenated, and also to be the message to her that like, go for it, you know, live your life and make mistakes and, but put all of yourself into it. And to be honest, at Google, it was awesome. But after 10 years, like your identity becomes so entrenched in it. It's like, I didn't know who I was outside of Google. And I think at that point it was like, I need to mix it up and I need to be uncomfortable again. And doing my own practice, it was totally that. Like I knew I was really good at coaching, and I knew the reasons why I was staying was I was content. I love the pay. I love the benefits. I love the what Google provided me, but I was ready for something more, especially now that the stakes were so much higher of me, you know, exchanging time to be away from her. So all that being said, I still work with the same coach and just kind of ironed out what are the things that are holding me back. And we just slowly but surely, they just started to dissolve, because I realized you know, I can figure out my own benefit situation. I can earn a living and cover our expenses. And I can set my own hours and just feel so empowered to do and live the life I want to live and be there for my daughter when I want to be there. All I can know, all of those things. It's just like, it was a matter of choice and really embracing it and knowing that I could do it within my being. And so it took a couple months, but it happened, and it feels so good to be on the other side and to actually work with people and help them navigate that same transition, because it really does take some time and a lot of courage.
It definitely does. And congratulations to you for really doing the work, listening deeply, trusting. And I know you're on it, like you're in that journey. So if there was to be a bit of guidance you might give somebody who's considering something like this, like one thing you might do differently and one thing you say definitely, like, this helped and I recommend this.
I think on the differently, it's, you know, I told you this before we joined the call. Like, I feel like I should have left the company maybe 3 years ago, because at that time I was so ready to leave, but I was really letting fear keep me there. So I'd say the thing I would do differently is, like, if you really feel the strong desire to do your own thing, follow that desire, because I think that is the universe, you know, higher power, whatever you want to call it. That is where you figure out your true potential and, like, why you are here on this earth. Follow that natural desire and go for it. I think when you smother it or you just make excuses like, no, this isn't for me, not everybody gets to do that, or this is all I'm destined for, then, like, you start to die a little bit inside. And this is our one life, our one shot at it. So that's the advice I would give somebody, like, what I would do differently. And I think the advice that I feel like really worked for me, it was working with a coach. I think even just if it's for a short period of time to iron out, like, what's getting in the way and how do I overcome those setbacks? Because you can journal about it and, you know, work through it on your own. It's very difficult though, especially for something like that, where, like, really stepping outside your comfort zone is going to take a lot of willpower. I think having someone to be your cheerleader and support you in holding you accountable to making those things happen, it really takes you to the next level. And so that's the thing I would recommend. Just don't do it alone.
Don't do it alone. And you may be exploring so many different reasons to leaving your corporate job, or even just making a transition to a different company or a different role. It doesn't have to just be that you're considering leaving to do coaching, but just any big transition and having a thought partner and someone like Susie. One of the things you demonstrated so beautifully in this conversation is to that reflection of that internal critic and learning to work with it more effectively so that you're listening to that higher self, that part of you that really has your best interest at heart. And so, yes to that. And then I'd be curious on your perspective. We get this feedback sometimes. If training managers in these coaching skills and coaching way of being can create such transformation, and your story is a complete lived example of that, why would I invest in that if people are just going to leave my company or my line of business? Why would I do that?
Yeah. Well, it's such a good point. And that was always kind of the joke that we had, not with coaching, but with that class I was telling you about, Search Inside Yourself. Like, everybody would take it and they would realize, like, oh my God, I got to leave my company. I need, like, what am I doing? And just blow it all up. But then, you know, after a couple weeks later, they come back to reality. And I would say, like, yes, there's two thoughts. I think one is that you want to invest in this because maybe people leaving isn't what they need. It's just a career change, or it's moving to the next level, and you're just there to support them in that. And the other thing is, like, as all leaders know, I mean, your time with that person is very temporary. You just want to be one step along the way. You obviously want to retain them a long time, but you know, at some point when they're not satisfied and they're ready for the next change and they're ready to grow, you stopping them from that is more detrimental for you and the company long term. And that's not for everybody. Really, having a really rich career in one place is satisfying enough, but you have to be able to meet their need and where they are. And that's what I think, that's why you should bring in coaching training and really help people have this way of being so that they can support the journey of their employees.
Yes to that. How can people stay connected to you, find your services, and give us a little bit of insight into your specific niche of folks who can work with you and get support from your specific journey?
Yeah. So find me at suzyade.com or on LinkedIn. I'm really active there. And my specific area is kind of my bread and butter. It's career coaching and life purpose coaching. So that's what I did over and over again. And I really like to work with people who are on that point. They want to make a transition. They don't know what it is quite yet. You know, whether it's something internal within their company or they want to make the leap into their own business. That's who I love to work with and helping you figure out, like, how does that align with why you were put on this earth? I really feel like we all have that innate calling and purpose and that it changes over time. But where it is now, you have to uncover that. And I love doing that with people. I really thrive off of it. And yeah, I'm taking clients. So anybody can reach out through my website, suzyade.com.
So you heard it here on the Up Level Podcast. Suzy is a lived example of the type of person that she's coaching and that's going through a similar tension, if you will, in their journey. And so just hearing your personal story, Suzy, you are so inspiring. And I'm so happy to call you a colleague. And I'm really grateful that you listened. You did the work to listen deeply to yourself. And I suspect this process will continue and the different ways you live your purpose will have iterations, you know, as your daughter grows and you grow. And I'm just grateful that we got this time with you now at this juncture, super helpful for the ROI of coaching in the workplace and beyond. Thank you for being with us.
Well, thank you so much for having me. It's been a blast.
Thanks for joining us this week. If you love this episode, please subscribe, download a few more episodes, and leave a review. Also, we'd love to hear what key takeaways you had from this episode. Be sure to reach out to us on social media. You can find us by searching for Uplevel Productions or looking for our handles in the podcast description. We truly appreciate you. Thank you for coming to learn, love, and uplevel with us. Until next time.